things might come over you as you lift your new wig out of that box. Feels almost weightless, doesn't it? Like a palm full of sunshine. Sure does. Oh yes, you could be anyone with a wig, couldn't you? A sea captain, maybe? A cheese salesman? A mayor of a small town in Iowa? The sky's the limit. Those polyester fibers might feel good on your skin. Go ahead, rub it on your skin. Rub it on your face, just a little, if you want to. It's not illegal. You might even want to laugh. Go ahead, laugh away. Others will understand when they see you shoving your face in your new wig. Laugh and laugh. Laugh at love. What is love? Is love a feeling between two living creatures? A mutual bond held strong by affection? Couldn't love be between you and your wig? Why not? Who could stop you? You might like the way the light shimmers off your new wig. It might be so enchanting, you want to take your relationship a step farther. Sure, you've had a few glasses of wine and that wig is giving you the eyes from the Ottoman. Don't f*** the wig. No matter how that wig looks at you, no matter what that wig says, remember, every year, 3 to 5 people go to real jail for f***ing wigs. Real criminals. Real bad guys. Do you want to be one of them? This has been a public safety announcement brought to you by Concerned Mothers Against Wig F***ing.
This is InfoCast 5000.
Hey everybody,
This is InfoCast 5000.
Hey everybody, I'm your host, Baron Bally.
I'm the other host, Sam Acuff.
InfoCast 5000 is a podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists.
And what is our topic today?
It seems like I should know this. It seems like something that I've been working on for a while.
Right on the tip of your tongue.
Is it mullets? Please tell me it's mullets.
I honest to God want to put a cap on how many times you can say the word mullet today.
You can't.
You have to think of other hair besides mullets.
What other hair
I'm
is
going
there?
To get there. Driven crazy if it always comes to mullets.
What
challenge yourself. Challenge yourself.
Yeah, what are we researching today, Sam? What are we talking about today?
Wigs have played an interesting role in human history. They have been used to represent things like one's status or profession, and some were fashioned out of utility necessity and others for sheer vanity. To some, they represented a horrible sickness, while others became symbols of class superiority. And some might even say, wigs even helped shape a political revolution. Others may have only thought of wigs as costume pieces or accessories to the beauty industry, and while they aren't on everyone's must-have list nowadays, they've played a critical role in our society for several millennia and still shape popular culture to this day. So please join us this week as we try to figure out why wigs exist.
Well. Where would we be in an InfoCast episode without beginning at our favorite natives of the Nile, the Egyptians?
Yeah, they really own our asses.
I'm waiting for the sponsorship. Wigs were fashionable for both sexes in ancient Egyptian society, said to have been constructed from human hair, sheep wool, or vegetable fibers.
It seems as though the main reasons Egyptians shaved their heads was because of the unforgiving desert heat, but then they wore wigs to also protect themselves from the sun.
Oh yeah, that's a good fucking idea. Wear a wool blanket over your head to protect you from the heat. Great. Good job, Egyptians.
Well, Baron, a well-made wig from natural fiber would protect you from direct sun exposure and sudden sandstorms, but it would also allow for body heat to escape through the natural fabric. And so long as it was fairly loose-fitting, it could also slow down the evaporation of sweat, keeping the body cooler. Although I did read that the upper classes would use resin or beeswax to affix their rugs, so probably more than not, it was primarily the sandstorm and sun thing, and less so the breathability thing. But I think the breathability thing might have applied to like other people's wigs of the lower classes.
Yeah, you know what else did that? Actual hair.
Right, but you can't take your hair off and splash cool water on your scalp when you're done wearing the wig for protection. Now, what I really don't get, and you'll see eye to eye on me with this one, is that Egyptians also created beard wigs. That one seems excessive and hot. I don't get it.
And the funny thing about that, if you recall back to our beard episode, mm-hmm. those fake wigs were called pastiches. And to get it even more hotter, just because they decided they were going to have a little brick oven on their chin, they inlaid it with gold and silver as well as actual hair, which is, you know, very conductive of heat, I would imagine. So.
Well, I have two theories. One is it was a status thing. You know, there are records of even women pharaohs wearing the beards, the beard pastiches.
Yep.
As part of their garb. My other theory is that it was an orgy thing, like an ancient flavor saver.
I don't know. If there's silver on it, though, would the flavor just slide off? I lost my flavor.
You have different ones. You got one for the streets and one for the sheets.
Also, yeah, there were several reasons why they did this. And a lot of it was because of status and a lot of it because, you know, I guess they wanted to mop up after the orgies, but also
mop up. Oh my God. That's not a term I'd like to, or maybe I would like to associate with orgies.
We actually don't know that. Maybe they put some kind of like stain on it. I don't know. Aside from the orgies, though, we're going to get away from the orgies for a minute.
Aww.
And talk about, there was another hygiene issue, and that was the fucking lice, because even in the desert,
was
you can't
it just
get
lice,
away.
Or was it like other bugs too? I didn't see a lot other specifically. Bugs. I think we assumed lice, unless you actually read lice.
There was specifically lice. Okay. Yeah. There was sand lice. I don't know if sand lice get in the hair, but I think they do kind of the same thing as actual lice, and then there might have been actual lice too.
They're just cooler. They have boy shorts on and sunglasses and they kick sand in your face.
Yeah. So, and also on top of everything, the Egyptians didn't just shave off their heads. They shaved off their whole fucking.
They shaved off their fucking heads?
Yeah. That's what we're talking about. They did not decapitate themselves. Although we're going to talk about something that maybe was a little masochistic on that end. They shaved all of their body. Not just their heads.
Oh.
Yeah. They shaved their entire body because hair was seen as this shameful, unclean thing that was basically infecting you mm-hmm. throughout the whole thing. So I think a lot of this, as we're talking about, has to do...
That's got
to
be hard to live with. That hair is infecting you?
I think that's how they looked at
that's
it.
That's a full-time job.
I just pictured it
for
as
me, for me, it is.
As this like manic dream that somebody had, that whoever set the rules for Egyptian society is just laying in bed like, gotta get the hair off. Gotta get the hair off, man. Oh, it's everywhere.
Must
it's just growing.
Slick.
I can feel the hair growing on me, man. It's
must
just
be clean. Must be smooth.
Maybe it was a little smoother than
just
that.
Just slowly rubbing coconut oil on yourself. Like,
Anyway, so the Egyptians were shaving everything. And I think a lot of this has to do, as we touched on in the beard episode, as we were talking about, that this was, particularly in beards, but also hair in general, this was a great way visually to distinguish who was a god and who was a mortal when you're talking about those hieroglyphics and reliefs that the Egyptians used to paint. And, you know, pretty much every visual artistic medium up until a certain point, it was viewed that the gods, you know, were the only ones allowed to have hair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you had a god pictured with a beard in these reliefs and the mortal didn't have any hair, they were just this, you know, smooth silver surfer
type guy. Yeah.
Yeah, guy.
We've all seen The Mummy.
Yeah.
Guys are slick. They're baby slick.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was easier than just drawing an arrow and saying, this is the god. This is the mortal. There were even several ways that you could go hairless in Egypt beyond just shaving yourself. And that was depilatory creams, or you could go the masochistic route and just rub your fucking head on a pumice stone.
That sounds great.
You wanted to.
You were into that. I stoned my hair off.
So it was also noted that the Greeks and Romans, when they hung out with the Egyptians, they thought the Egyptians were super weird for bathing all the time and going hairless.
Which is kind of weird because I saw that you had put that, so thought that sounded odd because the ancient Romans were pretty well known for their bathhouses, or so I had thought. I mean, they were, but I thought that went hand in hand with being famous for bathing. But it turns out that regular bathing didn't really become a thing until like the late 3rd century in Rome, basically right before the fall of the Roman Empire. Prior to this, they only washed their arms and legs every day because of work and would only wash their torsos every 9th day.
What I'm really concerned about is when they wash their crotches. I don't care.
That was on the ninth day.
Is that part of your torso?
Well, where do you draw the line?
I don't know. That's what I need to know.
I did say limbs.
No, a crotch is not a
limb. It
wouldn't
go that extra mile, you know, just beep, beep, the ball sack. Beep, beep.
That is arguably the most important part to keep clean, though. You know, like your teeth and your balls. You got to keep, and your butt crack, keep those clean.
In that order, that's your most important. Teeth, balls, butt crack, or teeth, butt crack, balls?
Well, teeth are obviously first.
Teeth are first.
Teeth are always first.
It's
okay.
Good to know.
And then I don't think it matters where you go at that point.
Not to keep bringing it back to the orgies, but the Romans loved orgies too. So I'd hate to be on like an eighth day orgy. Or maybe they just scheduled them for the ninth day every day.
That's what I'm saying. I'm fine with the orgies if they wash their crotches. If they didn't,
I think it was a ninth day thing.
Ah, man. Yeah, no, then you can't do the orgy. Dirty crotches notwithstanding, the most pervasive precedents we see with wigs for the Egyptians were their use as a distinguishing mark of how high you were on the social totem pole. The more elaborate the wig, the more bedazzled that you got with it, with the gold and the ivory, then that meant the higher your rank was. And that concept of wig by rank never quite left humanity. It started with the Egyptians, but it carried farther into history by large players of influence on Western culture.
And yeah, we've seen that time and time again in previous topics. Like anything that can be seen as somewhat of an accessory, and if you know anything that you can bump up with jewels or gold, you're going to show that you can flex. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it with straws. They did it with coffins. They did it with prosthetics.
That was it. That was the rap video at the time. That was like covering the bed with money and like rolling in it. And
not the simplest comparison, but I like where you're going.
It's
come on, keep going.
we're
the rap video.
Tootin' Commons playing flute.
Because that's
the
what
background.
Everyone does today when they're trying to flex is they shoot a rap video in your mind.
Some guy is
you
going.
You could have said a watch. You could have said a car. You said a rap video.
That is like that is like society's most audacious show of opulence.
That's the greatest show of wealth you can picture in your head.
That's the first thing that came to mind, for sure.
Okay. please tell us about the Romans.
So the Romans took this idea, and despite giving the Egyptians a bunch of shit for their over-the-top cleanliness standards, they still wore wigs, of course. But the Romans wouldn't put no goddamn animal or vegetable fiber on their head. No, sir.
Too good for carrot wig.
Too good for a carrot wig. Too good for carrot wig. The only wig that would suit a Roman head was one made from the hair of a slave. And in one article I read is sometimes they weren't even bald. They just like slapping this slave pelt on their own hair and going off to cavort.
So it kind of lost its like utility purpose and just slowly kind of transition. It slid into the realm of flamboyance. No, I'm not trying to be funny. Like with Egypt, at least it started with a utilitarian purpose and then got that stripe in it of status. Romans took it and it became intrinsically status-based.
I guess because the Egyptians had already laid the precedent for, yeah, we already did the utilitarian thing, man. What else can you do with it? And they were like, slave, shape, hair, blunk, wee!
Yeah. I guess your papyrus hair is cool, but this is Jerry's hair. And there's only one Jerry, so that makes this a pretty rare wig.
So as the styles for the Romans became more garish and full, leading to elaborate overlapping and as these wigs grew inside, let me think about this.
And sometimes the wigs had giant arms.
So the styles, as the wigs took hold inside of Roman culture, the styles became more garish and full, leading to elaborate overlapping braids and leaning forward beehives. Sometimes even color choice would contrast with their natural hair color just because they could. So the German tribal slaves that they happen to have around, these were a prized commodity, especially the blondes. The Romans didn't care. The Romans did not give a shit. Look at our pretty hair.
I will challenge you look in at that my pretty they hair. Did care.
Look at my pretty hair.
I have to look at this whole time. And by the way, there's no, you know, unless you're looking on Instagram at some of our posts, Baron's wearing a wig. I'm not kidding. Baron's wearing a mullet wig from previous Halloween just for fun. Anyway, back to the point. I challenge you in that they did care. And that's because what you said is true, but it's only partly true, in that it became a bit of a social fetish later in the empire. In contrast, during the early Roman Empire, light-colored hair was associated with the barbarian women of Gaul and Germany, who often ended up as slaves in brothels. Consequently, Roman law required all prostitutes to either dye their hair blonde or wear a blonde wig in order to distinguish themselves from, quote, proper dark-maned ladies. So, for a long stretch of the early Roman Empire, blonde hair was symbolic with working within the sex trade or the sex industry. But then ironically, light hair became fashionable. This is the period that you're talking about. After Greek culture reached Italy and the Roman legionaries began bringing back fair-haired slaves from Gaul, this led to a Gaulish envy that struck Rome in its later years. Then all of a sudden, it became fashionable to have fair blonde hair and a surge of desire for blonde hair inside the ranks of the nobility led to the reversal of the law that I had stated earlier about prostitutes having to wear blonde wigs. I think this came about when the empire split in two, but in some cases, the highest levels of nobility would actually use gold flakes in their wigs to show that their blondness was more blonde and superior.
And the blondes shall have more fun, and nobody shall make dumb blonde jokes about us circa Pliny the Elder 212 AD wearing a blonde wig.
Beautiful.
Thank Beautiful. You. but that actually tracks with what I found about the correlation between status and wigs in Rome. So aside from hue, they were these garish fashion statements. And the more elaborate your wig was, again, the higher status in Roman society you probably had. And that's going to be a recurring theme throughout this podcast. I don't think people realize this, but wigs were synonymous with some of the most recognizable Roman figures in history.
Give us some of these examples, Baron.
All right. Well, first off, we have General Hannibal with two wigs, one for kicking ass and one for making sweet, sweet love.
Ooh.
And on our next contestant, we have Julius Caesar, who hails from the other side of the spectrum, who is said to have worn a wig to cover his baldness because virility was very important in Roman history.
Well, then after the fall of the Roman Empire, which was around 476 CE, they seemed to fall into disuse and didn't begin to make a comeback until the late 1500s and were extremely popular until about the 18th century. Not that they're not still popular today, but this was really their big time, you know, like the golden age of wigs. There are three major reasons for this, which we will get into, and those reasons are alopecia, head lice, and syphilis. First, let's talk about syphilis because I know that's the one that got everyone's attention.
Ooh.
By 1580, the STD had become the worst epidemic to strike Europe since the Black Plague. According to William Clowes, a predominant 16th century English surgeon, a, quote, infinite multitude of syphilis patients clogged London's hospitals and more filtered in each day. Without antibiotics, victims faced the full brunt of the disease, open sores, nasty rashes, blindness, dementia, and patchy hair loss.
Look, but some of them were great writers, okay?
Up until the very end, like right at the end, it kind of turned into word salad, though.
Well, that's to be expected.
That's the B-side.
Yeah. Some people like that.
And so syphilis outbreaks sparked a surge in wig making. Syphilis victims hid their baldness as well as the bloody sores that scoured their faces with wigs made of horse, goat, and human hair.
Edgar?
Hmm?
Why is the horse shaved?
Why is the horse shaved?
Why is the horse shaved?
It's not because I have syphilis. Fun fact, Wigs were also coated with powder and scented with lavender or orange to hide any of the funky aromas wafting from those open, festering sores. And so, unfortunately, wigs became common, but not necessarily stylish yet. They were just a shameful necessity for the conditions of the times. I guess I shouldn't say shameful. I shouldn't STD shame. But that changed in 1655 when the King of France started losing his hair. And that sets us up pretty beautifully for the next factor, alopecia, also known as hair loss. Because obviously alopecia is a part of syphilis, but the two aren't necessarily intertwined, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, you could have alopecia and not have syphilis.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Hey, you know what the best part about having syphilis is, though? You could go as a pepperoni pizza for Halloween.
Gross. I hated that. Is the dating app for syphilis with people with syphilis just Drip? Dripper.
The icon is just like a faucet.
Oh, a single drop would have been better. You did a whole faucet. If we wanted a good example of balding, we can jump to the late 17th century and take a look at our homeboy Louis XIV, who has made two back-to-back InfoCast appearances.
What up? Great job. Great job. You're doing great.
So during his rule, Louis XIV was a king of fashion. In fact, it was said the Sun King himself had set France on the road to style stardom to become the mecca of the fashion industry we know today. That's because fashion became his economic stimulus plan for France in the late 1600s, so to speak, when he rose to power. I think he was just like next in line. He endorsed clothing lines, had rules about what outfits to wear for different functions, and as a reward to those that proved loyal to him, he was known to give permission to imitate his shoe style.
You can copy my shoes, but if you copy my pants, I swear to God, I am going to tell everyone you are a poser.
So why is it important? Well, another fact about Louis is that he began to lose his hair at the young age of 17. Afraid that a prematurely balding king may undermine his perceived power and authority, he began wearing wigs at a young age. He must have eventually grown into and owned the head accessories, though, because it seemed to be public knowledge at a certain point. And as a colloquially accepted king of fashion, wigs for men became fashionable during his stint as king. His cousin, Charles II, King of England, followed soon after, also because he was going bald. What a coincidence. And by then, courtiers and other aristocrats immediately copied the two kings. They sported wigs, and the style trickled down into the middle class and merchant classes. At the height of his wig enthusiasm, he employed 48 wig makers just to make his day-to-day looks. Although another source cited only 40, but whatever. Both are a lot, and that's a fuck ton of peruquiers.
Peruquiers. You sure that's how it's pronounced?
I was going to say paroquet. That's the official term for a wig maker.
That's how you say it? It's not paroquet?
Paroquets?
Yeah, whatever.
I'm trying my hardest to pronounce this word.
We're going with it.
Yeah.
One of those is good.
And just to be clear, baldness was not the sole variable that drove fashion at the time. Outside of the syphilitic population, wigs had become considered the height of vanity in Europe, and wig making became a very respectable trade. Demand was so high, there was a need to establish an independent wig makers guild in 1673. And there are other examples of wig pioneer celebrities outside of those covering up their receding hairline who are responsible for its growth and popularity during this time as well.
And one of those key players was Queen Elizabeth I, who was no slouch in the wig department herself. And she still lived under the constant shadow of court rumors of baldness that persisted through into the historical records even today. And it is a long-standing myth that Queen Elizabeth suffered from baldness due to her propensity for the wig.
They all had syphilis. They're all fucking each other.
They probably did. I mean, you're a little weird if you're royalty. I mean, you're a little inbred. There's a little something going on there.
And what happens in the family stays in the family.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's syphilis.
Yeah, there's you know, that deck isn't stacked all the way. Yeah. So don't worry. One of those things, Queen Elizabeth did have a full head of hair, so we can all not worry about that. Maybe she's...
Don't worry.
don't worry. So normally...
I know you were all holding your breath at home.
It was very concerning. Normally the queen would don something to match the fiery red hair that was her namesake, and her wigs were built to create as impactful a silhouette as possible. So imagine that a cone head and a seven-layer cake got together. There was some wine involved. There was some Netflix. There was some couch action. And out pops this wig in red-headed form. And the objective of this was to enhance the face with a frame, but also create a backdrop to a plethora of jewels, tiaras, and crowns that would project opulence, royalty, and majesty.
Gotcha. You said it was her namesake.
Yeah, that was, I was thinking about that as I said it, and I was like, that's not right.
So actually, her motivations were pretty in line, it seems, with ancient societies that used them to punctuate their status and opulence. By the way, unlike Queen Elizabeth, it is speculated that Louis XIV and Charles II almost certainly both suffered from hair loss because of syphilis, and the outbreak of syphilis itself is theorized to have been introduced by Christopher Columbus himself from his travels to the New World, as syphilis was a disease that didn't exist in Europe before 1495. And Christopher first arrived in the Americas in 1492 to return home only the following year.
It's called the gift that keeps on giving, Sam.
Well, it was, a lot of historians look at it as like poetic karma, because we brought, well, we as white people brought smallpox here. And then they gave us syphilis. And by they gave us syphilis, Europeans raped the shit out of them, contracted syphilis, and brought it back to Europe.
I mean, all of that's a problem. But
we're here talking about wigs. Although others may have suggested it may have been transmitted to the French via the Spanish, via mercenaries serving the King Charles of France anyway.
No, don't believe the fucking French.
So it's this big incestuous fucking bog of syphilis and colonialism, and I just want to talk about wigs. So let's get back to it, huh?
Okay, so aside from the syphilis and the alopecia, I just think it's hilarious that the wig, the power of the midlife crisis was even stronger than the fear of hellfire. Because
you want to elaborate?
Because the church, we had mentioned that there was this void, this baldness in history from 4th century Rome until about the 16th century. And that was because the church really clamped down on these wig rules for whatever reason.
For about 1,000 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a sin to wear wigs. And one of those things was they wanted to control everybody's appearance. You know, it was deemed that women were supposed to wear head coverings in the Bible, and that's where the hijab comes from, actually. So the Christians,
you can still wear a wig under your hijab.
don't let anybody find out. Jesus.
Well,
you know
just
what would happen if you were a woman and you found out they had, that you had a wig?
Well, that's just under a little secret hijab between you and God. You know?
God would know. Well, that was the thing. It was like, yeah, the whole point of all of that was that since God gave you your natural hair or your natural looks, then
naturalism,
why would you wear a wig to cover that up?
You're kind of
a sinner.
You're kind of saying fuck you to God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why wigs disappeared. But yeah, I just think it's funny that Louis XIV was like, you know what? Fuck it. If I go to hell, I go to hell, but nobody's going to know that I was bald.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair at that point, I think religion was kind of losing its death grip on the ruling class that it had the prior 1,000 years.
Right.
You know, it still was there, but yeah, but you know, well, not quite yet.
Right. That was the 17th.
That's coming up.
Yeah.
So lastly, just to get back onto it, we're not going to miss hygiene. Don't worry. Because I did say that was the third one. And I know everyone's just excited.
I was worried.
Lastly, we have head lice and hygiene in general. The head lice are going to make their way back from Egypt. Don't call it a comeback. So it's no secret that Westerners in this time period could be quite disgusting. The French in the 1700s were encouraged to not brush their teeth. Fun fact. And people in the 1600s used linen condoms that the churches tried to condemn anyway, favoring unprotected sex in a time that syphilis was still running fucking rampant.
But did they wash their crotches? Did they wash their crotches?
Less. Actually, less. I did look that up. It was pretty, and you infrequently wash yourself. During this time period, no bullshit. It might have been before this. It might be more like Middle Ages. But people, no bullshit, would take an annual bath.
You know what I have learned the most from
this
podcast?
Do not steamroll that I just said an annual bath. And I have a follow-up fact for that. So they took one bath a year, and that's why a lot of weddings happened in May, because that's when the annual baths happened. I'm not shitting
you. I believe you.
And just to make sure that the stink, the whole large contributing factor of why flowers are so ceremonial at weddings was because it was to mask the odor of anyone that didn't make their bath yet.
Ooh. Well, what I was going to say is the thing that this podcast has proved to me is that I cannot go back in time and have sex with anybody.
Another unfortunate hygienic situation plaguing Europe at this time were head lice. And we're bringing it back in, putting that train back on the tracks.
Choo-choo.
See, even when King Louis and Charles II died, wigs stuck around. They remained popular because at the time, head lice were everywhere and nitpicking was painful and time-consuming. Nitpicking referring to getting lice out of your natural hair. Wigs, however, only sort of curb the problem because the lice stopped infesting people's hair but would infect the wigs instead. So it was like body armor for lice. But, fun fact, delousing a wig was much easier than delousing an actual head of hair. And for this, you would simply send your dirty, infected headpiece to the wig maker that probably made it, and they would boil your wig to remove the nits. Doesn't that all just sound fucking lovely?
Up to this point, you could argue that wig culture was a feedback loop between European and colonial Americans that both impacted each other. So before the American Revolution, you could find powdered wig-wearing gentries in the colonies. And once again, the wig was this demarcation of class, but that concept was fed by Mother England. And there were several different styles, and each one would say something about what your profession was. For instance, clergy tended to be a mass of curls down to the shoulders and parted in the middle, while lawyer style would be waving and flowy. Country singer, mullet, obviously.
All right. You know what? That's fair. You made it like halfway through the episode before mentioning mullet, and I'm fucking proud of you.
Yes.
And I'm actually surprised that we're only mentioning this far in, but the ones you're picturing and you at home are picturing, that like British judges and old-timey lawyers wear, those curly ones, they're called periwigs. And that's where the modern colloquial term wig is derived from, is that specific wig. Also, before I forget, I just want to point out that you said powered wig instead of powdered wig. And I'm just picturing wigs that are almost as big as the people. Like it became this power move to have the biggest wig.
You put some spin tacks on that shit.
Yeah.
We're going back to the rap video thing. Well,
and you know what? No wasted bits here. I know we didn't talk about her. I think we're going to talk about her in Dirty Bits, but Marie Antoinette is another huge non-balding wig figure. And she's known for having wigs that were so elaborate that some of them were 30 or 40 pounds. So if you want to talk about a power wig.
She must have had a buff ass neck.
A buff fucking neck, dude. Sexy neck.
Dig it. I love
that
it.
Neck.
You know, other than the oppressing of the proletariat, she's my kind of lady.
Thick neck.
Thick neck,
she
thick
got
neck girl.
She,
aside from
rap videos, were different back then. Bustiers and thick necks.
I think that was one of Mozart's first singles that he dropped was
Baby
thick
Got
Neck.
Neck. I like Baby Got Neck better.
So anyway, aside from the military, which had this whole other thing going on, only about 5% of the colonial population could actually afford a wig. This was because a custom-made one would cost a good half acre of land or so, and they had bigger things to worry about at the time, like not dying.
Right, right.
Yeah. And once you got this wig, you still had to trot your poor ass down to the wig maker to get it laundered and powdered, and they weren't doing that for free, unless you could do them a little favor first, and who knows what a favors a wig maker
what old
needs.
Carl the wig maker wants you to
do. Yeah, yeah.
He's been lonely. He's been out on the edge of town for a long time. He's talking to his wigs.
He's just powdering
He's
wigs.
He's just boiling and powdering wigs, and all of a sudden here comes this young strapping lad that wants a wig, but he's got no money. So next thing you know, you're blowing Carl. As you were, though. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so that pretty much leaves the wig for the wealthy elite who, aside from the profession specialities, had adopted a more social style of side bobs that curled when you got down to the jawline. And the more stacks of curls that you had, the more money you had as well. Basically, this was the 17th century version of gourmet cheese.
Again, rap videos, gourmet cheese.
Listen, cheese is expensive. Cheese is expensive.
Your perception of rich people is like what a cartoon character rich person is.
If you have nice cheese, you know how much a cheese wheel costs?
Nice cheese and rap videos plus is so far your criteria. For
if you
rich.
Have the extra refrigerator to house your cheese wheel,
now
okay.
There's a cheese fridge.
That's what I'm saying. You're
you
fucking
ever
rich.
Seen a cheese fridge?
If you have one, you're rich. That's what I'm getting at.
Oh my God.
So as the American Revolution loomed, wigs made an appearance in the war for soldiers and generals alike. Soldiers on both the American and British side need their own curly tresses, but the styles worn by the gentry weren't impractical for marching and shooting. So even the most informal bob wig was too hot and easily infested with bugs, and it's hard to work a flintlock if you have about 15 curls blocking your fucking face.
A bad carpenter blames his tools.
But, you know, that's fair, I guess.
Shots fired. Yeah. Revolutionary era fucking soldiers. Yeah.
Get over it. Over it, soldiers. Yeah.
Work with just what you got. Stop being a bunch of
headband.
Pussies and wear a wig.
You ever heard of a headband before?
Yeah.
So the revolutionary soldier needed their hair blowing in the wind as he marched toward battle, his movement unhindered by heavy curls. And that was the pigtail, made popular by King George I's army, which was usually knotted in the back and held by a nice pretty ribbon.
Right.
These wigs, usually custom fitted to the wearer, were known stylistically as the Remilius wig, noting a famous British victory over the French in the War of Spanish Succession in 1706. And these could be tricked out with some side locks if you were feeling spicy. These were often powdered to keep down grease, often to such an extent it is said that if an officer stood downwind, it would seem as if a squall had befallen over the battlefield, which is hilarious.
It's like a ye olde smoke grenade.
Yeah. These snowy wigs were
generally... Everyone quick, shake your heads!
But these snowy wigs were generally not available, again, to the common soldier because they were fucking expensive. But the more common soldiers who didn't have long...
Carl's getting a lot of blowjobs.
Say Carl's. So many blowjobs. The more common soldiers who didn't have long enough hair for the cool ponytail... usually got their hands on a false one, which was made of leather, with a tuft of hair at the end, which was spliced or fastened on the scalp.
Which sounds cooler for a soldier than actual wig? Like a bunch of soldiers in file with like a leather strap coming from their head?
I have a hard time visualizing that because they had in the
picture. I have a hard time visualizing these wigs at all. I still can't figure out how much of it is their hair and how much of it isn't.
Yeah.
But I can picture leather. Like leather hair.
Is it
like that
braided?
Sounds metal as fuck.
Is it braided leather though?
The leather?
Yeah.
I don't know. Use your imagination. I'm sure some of them.
Okay.
Is it? You know, it's cute.
Is it like throngs?
I don't know. I didn't see any pictures. But you want to know something that's cute though? And I hope this doesn't derail what you're saying. And the soldiers at this time, it was a part of your uniform. It was expected of your uniform, so everyone had to wear it, as you're kind of saying. But they couldn't tie it themselves.
Yes.
So. They all had to tie each other's.
Yeah.
So it was like a bunch of soldiers going to fight in one of the most brutal wars in our history, having like a ponytail braiding party before every major battle.
Did you see what Jerry was doing with his ponytail over across the river there?
I thought Jerry was a slave from the first bit back in Rome.
I don't know. I just used Jerry as a generic name, but go with the bit.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, Jerry. Jerry makes a hell of a fucking ponytail.
Oh, Jerry's ponytails are beautiful.
I can't wait to stab a Brit. I hope my ponytail stays immaculate during while. Oh, man.
I hope I don't get blood on my daffodils.
Yeah.
I put some nice flowers in my ponytail.
It's
I wanted
not...
to smell nice. It would detract from my crotch smell.
That's too...
And of course, all American and British soldiers were issued this flour and grease to make sure that you had the aura of a fucking unicorn as you gunned down your enemies.
Ooh. I don't know if this is the case with the Americans, but in the case of the British, The powdering flower came at the expense of the soldier. It was taken out of their pay and given to them as a part of their weekly rations, which I guess you only got food in the beginning of the week and you had to ration it, hence the term ration.
And they were not allowed to make food with it.
And while I have the stage, I actually read that as the war went on, many patriots, especially militiamen, would just sport their natural hair in a ponytail, unpowdered, in a gesture of rebellion of the tyrannical English.
Yeah, take that, English. Mm-hmm. We're not putting no goddamn powder at all.
We're not even going to wear a wig. How do you like... My point stands.
I got him.
I die without a wig. Wait, you're French?
I'm a British soldier with a French accent.
I thought you were British. I'm going to tell
I'm still British.
I'm going to tell him. Just,
But, and also, I know what you're thinking, but even G-Dubs himself tended to sport the common soldier cue of the ponytail with his own God-given hair.
I hate that you wrote G-Dubs.
G-Dubs!
that's right. Despite common misconceptions, George Washington never actually wore a wig. He was also one of five presidents who was a redhead, but that's beside the point. George liked to fashion his hair in the common rank and file soldier fashion. However, he would still powder his hair white because white hair was still considered extremely fashionable and was considered a sign of wealth and knowledge.
Yeah, so basically all these paintings of him in a wig were just an Instagram filter.
Everything you say I hate.
But don't let that fool you into thinking that wigs were on their way out just yet, because after George, the next four presidents, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and James Monroe, all indeed wore wigs. And of course, we just had a most recent president who wore fucking wigs as well.
I don't think he wore, I think it was a comb over.
He had a toupee, bro.
Did he?
Fuck yeah.
I thought it was like a really elaborate.
No.
I don't like the guy either, but I'm going to fact check that.
We're going to do that in Dirty Bits. We're going to talk about Trump's toupee.
I think I specifically read a thing that it was like a very expensive hairstyle that incorporated a comb over.
Fake news.
That's fair. That's fair comeback. Anyway, your erroneous claims aside, Wiggs still had a little fight in him to this point. Back in late 18th century Europe, you know, post-Revolutionary War, you still had increasingly elaborate wigs with mile-high coiffures, and highly decorated curls. Sorry, that one was in my notes because I knew I was going to have a hard time saying that, and I still did. White powdered wigs with long ringlets became a standard for a short while, and in fact, some imaginative ladies had wigs with small bird cages complete with taxidermy birds on the top of their head. Call back to taxidermy. What? Contributing to that taxidermy industry. People needed to have dead birds on their head because that shit was sexy. Bring that shit to the club. But sadly, like many other trends, the wig was about to hit that point where it grew too big for its britches and was about to be hashtag canceled. These maximalist and ornate wigs became a symbol of financial excess.
Wait. You called me on my Instagram reference, but hashtag canceled?
I'm hip.
Come on.
The kids get that one. Come on, Grandpa. The Age of Enlightenment, which began around 1715, brought a new mentality to Western civilization where educated men became more concerned with the plight of the common man. As the difference of wealth between upper and lower classes became greater and greater, extravagant expenditure on fashion and hair was perceived as ignorant and insulting to the lower class. And wigs, particularly in revolutionary France, were considered a sign of the aristocracy, and with newly wealthy bourgeoisie, they did not want to be associated with the nobility of the old guard, particularly because these nobles, during this time, were more often than not getting their heads chopped off in the guillotines. And although it seems more historians agree that the American Revolution impacted the French Revolution, some scholars debate on the significance the former played on the latter. But one thing is objectively certain, that in both of these instances, once the aristocracy was out, so were the Whigs. This was further solidified with two more important occurrences. The first was that artistic influence during this era shifted from the opulent style of Rococo to the more sober neoclassical, which pulled inspiration from the ancient classic Greek aesthetic, aka no giant elaborate wigs. And second,
aww.
I know. And second, in 1795, Parliament passed the Hair Powder Act, effectively making wigs inaccessible to the merchant and lower classes.
Come on, man!
I know!
What if they want to wear a fucking sweet-ass mullet wig?
I'm going to tell you exactly what would happen if they wanted to wear a sweet-ass mullet wig. Unless one met certain qualifications, such as being a member of British royal family or the clergy, citizens had to spend their hard-earned money to purchase a certificate to even purchase hair powder, let alone, I guess it was just hair powder. They can have a wig. The certificate cost about the equivalent of $122 today, and after the cost of a wig, maintenance, and applying for a wig license on top of art, and fashion, turning away from the powdered wig of yore, most commoners just went au naturel. Also, $122 went a lot farther back then.
Yeah, okay, so this is the thing that I don't completely understand about this whole thing, is like, I understand why the wigs were resented by the lower class at this point, but I don't understand why they felt like they had to put extra taxes and licenses on the wig, like they didn't, I don't quite understand.
That's a depth I couldn't quite get into, and I don't know the difference of politics between England and France at that particular juncture of time, because that was a British rule. That wasn't French. In France, I will say, and I don't know if this is anecdotal or how credible this is, but I read one book telling of the fact that, you know, the flour that you use to powder your wig was the same flour that you use to make bread. So people were starting pre-revolutionary France. That would be around 1799, because I don't know exactly when it happened, and I know that it happened for like 10 years, and I know that the American Revolution happened 24 or 25 years before the French Revolution. But again, I don't know if this is like anecdotal or legitimate, but the flour was either used in or was identical to the flour used to make bread. And since people were starving and it took, you know, like servants had to apply so much of this flour to the wigs of the aristocrats that it was like just driving them fucking insane to like a tipping point. And I know there's like a lot of other factors that went into the French Revolution, but it seems like wigs became kind of like symbolic and a rallying cry. So maybe post-revolution, there was like some of the upper class still trying to cling to the old ways. Maybe there was a version in France where they tried to cling to it, but in Europe, that was maybe it too, like to demarcate themselves as the upper class, despite the fact that it was becoming out of vogue for the lower classes.
Yeah, I guess if you're worried about...
That's all speculation.
Yeah, we might have to look a little bit deeper into that because...
That's why we do Dirty Bits.
Yeah, the logic there is like, you know, even if you're in the upper class and you are worried about losing your head on a fucking guillotine, your next move is to raise taxes on a commodity. But again, that's
England. They didn't have, I mean, England's different, you know. Maybe they didn't have something similar in France, but again, that was an English piece of legislation.
Right. No, I understand that, but they were quite aware of what was going on in France, and I'm sure that was...
Yeah, but they weren't going around guillotining people in England.
Right, but, you know, that might have been a thought, right? No, I'm serious. Like.
No, yeah, you're right. And at this point, I'm just so far away from our research that I don't want to speak to it before I look at it, but you're right.
Fair enough.
It's worth looking at. So obviously, wigs have made their way back into our lives, however, or else we wouldn't be talking about them on our show. Starting in the beginning of the 20th century, pastiches, or pre-made small wiglets, started becoming fashionable in Europe and then pretty much anywhere else that followed the fashion industry. And throughout the 20th century, wigs rolled with the punches to fit the fashion of the time and led to another very pervasive aspect of our culture today, hair extensions. Wigs still have their place in our society as well. However, there seems to be a lot more freedoms with wearing wigs nowadays. For starters, there aren't laws that regulate how and when you can wear them. And although they can still get fairly pricey, they're still far more accessible now than they ever were. And there's no real class restrictions on wig etiquette. Or, for that matter, government-issued licenses that you need to purchase and prove your royal blood to wear a wig. Obviously, we could probably do a whole nother episode on wigs over the past 100 years, but there's more hair history than time we have today. But don't worry, we'll have some good content for you in Dirty Bits. And that being said, I hope everyone enjoyed tagging along as we try to figure out why wigs exist.
Anyway, where was I?
You weren't talking. I was talking. but yeah, I mean, there's a lot that I wanted to cover in the last 100 years, and I'm going to bring some of it up in Dirty Bits. The relationship between black women and wigs throughout the desegregation period in the 50s and 60s, the influence it has on our modern culture nowadays, the hair industry, which I'm like struggling to find data on. I thought it'd be easier, but I know also around the 50s and 60s is when China and India really started making hair one of their major exports. And we have Locks of Love, which I have a personal story about, where I tried to donate my hair to Locks of Love. And that's a huge avenue that people make human hair wigs for now. There's just a lot there that I was certain we were going to run out of time. So I just cut it off after the fall of wigs, after the Age of Enlightenment.
And if you hate uplifting stories about humanity and serious topics, just remember, Andy Warhol wore a fucking wig too.
Wait, he did?
Hell yeah.
I didn't know that.
Andy Warhol wore so many wigs. Andy Warhol.
That seems very obvious
weird.
Now. Like, once you said that, it became pretty obvious.
Yeah. So, everybody out there, take off your wig. Let your natural hair breathe.
Or keep it on.
Or keep it on.
If you want to wear it, if it makes you feel powerful and sexy.
And go type in your word browser? Web browser?
And wash your pastiche after the orgies.
Yeah, or don't.
No, it's sanity. You should.
It's called Flavor Saver for a reason, Sam.
Yeah, well, wash it before you bring it back. Because that's just good orgy etiquette.
We're not going to judge you. Whatever you're into, go to your word browser and type
in. Your word browser. Yes, yeah, yes. Just go to fucking infocast5000.com.
No, that's not. You're wrong.
Well, go there, and then when it doesn't do anything, go to where Baron's going to tell you to go next.
WordPress.infocast5000.com.
That was pretty close.
You're fairly close.
Yeah, go to WordPress.infocast.com.
Check out our website.
Check out our website.
We got a website.
Also, check out Instagram, which I got fucking flagged on. Did you know about this?
Yeah, you told me about it.
Yeah. Fuck it. Somebody ratted on us.
No, I did. You didn't tell me about it. What's going on?
No, I told you about it.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody didn't appreciate what we posted, and I'm not allowed to post or like or follow anyone for 2 weeks. So fuck you, Instagram. You just suck. Anyway, if you've noticed our inactivity,
but he'll
that's
be
why.
Back. He'll be back by the time
with a vengeance.
You hear this.
And they better bring their guns fucking loaded.
You thought you had your DMs blocked. You thought you had your shit encrypted. Sam will find you and send you a message.
I'm coming back with fucking full of piss and vinegar. I'm mad.
And I think that's it, everybody.
I'm coming for you, Zuckerberg.
Stay tuned next week for the Dirty Bits.
Yeah, come back. Oh, write a review and tell your friends about us.
Oh, yeah, write a review. I forgot.
Please,
about
tell
that.
Your friends about us.
Tell
or
your
family.
Friends.
Tell your little cousins.
Maybe not the cousins. Anybody under the age of...
If your grandma has a phone, just let our discography play.
Don't let anybody under the age of 52 listen to this podcast.
Also, let people over 52 listen to this podcast.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And under.
That's our... Bye.
Bye.